IMPART podcast aims to share how patients from New Brunswick are living with obesity, cancer, diabetes, cardiovascular, and other medical conditions. This podcast also aims to share related topics such as patient outcome, health industry, community, and technology. Hi, my name is Carrie Kalp, and I am the project manager of the IMPART podcast, and today you are going to listen to the very first pilot episode.
Hello, I am Lauren Cook.
And I'm Jeff McLeod.
And today on our very first IMPART podcast, we have Gloria with us.
Hello.
Thank you so much for coming in. We really appreciate it. Today, for our listeners, we are going to be talking about navigating the healthcare system, both as a vulnerable population and just hear more about Gloria's story. So let's get started.
So I'm Gloria, Gloria Dawn, I guess it would be my stage name, really it's my first and middle, Gloria Dawn Halvorsen, for those that can navigate a tough Norwegian name. I represent UBU Atlantic. It's a transgender support organization. Our mandate is to help trans folks and those close to them medically and socially transition safely in Atlantic Canada. I've been involved quite more involved with other things in the community as well. I was previous twice Secretary of St. John Pride, served as a delegate on the St. John and District Labor Council and live events for New Brunswick with the American Federation of Musicians of the United States and Canada, and last year's Woman of Distinction for Volunteer and Community Building. So now that I've got the bio of the way, I'm also a cancer patient, and I've been navigating the system for quite a few years, and there are some vulnerabilities and some good things in the system relating to patients like me and other vulnerable patients, and I'm just here to share some of my stories and some of the stories that have been shared with me, good and bad, and hopefully with awareness we can start some dialogue.
That is quite the intro. You are involved in a lot of things.
I seem to be busy.
You like staying busy, though?
Yes. As much as my health permits, sometimes I have to take a little bit of time off.
Are you good at taking a break?
Not especially. No. I usually get forced or I collapse or things just kind of give out. But I always seem to get back on the horse.
All right. Well, let's talk about your health. How about specifically your interaction with the healthcare system as a cancer patient? I'm sure there's been positives and negative things.
Absolutely. It has been mixed. Of course, it's a horrible thing, so there's a negative right off the bat with it. But for the actual experience, it's been quite mixed for me. Mostly positive, but I have had issues. I think it was 2013 I was first diagnosed, and it was prostate cancer. I'm a trans woman, full disclosure here. My prostate was removed, my lymph nodes were removed, and long story short, it did not get all my cancer. The cancer was larger than the outside of those organs and continued to spread. So the next course was radiation treatment. My endocrinologist told me, you need radiation, you've got to do this. I was at high risk, my cancer was quite advanced. And so I did radiation, did daily treatments for 9 weeks, so I got well burned. And that didn't work either. It's quite ironic, the rest of this story. They tried hormone blockers to block my testosterone, because it turns out that prostate cancer is largely fed by testosterone. My maleness was literally killing me, and it worked. It starved the cancer, and it spared me from cancer. And just as a personal observation, I would like to hear educated dialogue on this, or input on this, because I don't even pretend barely to be an oncologist, but if the hormone blockers are what actually spared me from the cancer, maybe we should have started that less invasive thing first, as opposed to put me through surgeries that were quite invasive and life-changing, and I'm still dealing with the aftermath of it, or the radiation treatments, which I'm going through a horrible time in the aftermath of that. Just a thought, something to explore or at least research. Like I said, I don't pretend that that's an answer, because I'm not knowledgeable enough, and I refuse to pretend knowledge. I don't want to become one of those people. But that seems like something that maybe we should be thinking about and possibly address in research. And, you know, it would probably save a ton of money for the medical establishment. Just something I wanted to throw out there while I had a chance to have a microphone and use my big mouth.
Absolutely.
No, I think we, Jeff and I, behind the scenes of research, it's becoming more and more prominent about hearing these patient-oriented treatments, thinking about putting patients through less invasive things before jumping right into something like radiation. But it still seems like we're starting with the like harshest, strongest form of defense instead of like, oh, maybe we could think of something else first.
Absolutely. Being on the receiving end, it does feel like that, although I don't actually believe that someone's just saying, well, let's go with the harshest. I suspect, I'll say it that way, that people are going what they feel with what they feel is tried and true.
Right.
But maybe it's time to rethink things and treatment or treatment thoughts of treatment, I'll say it that way, could be a little more dynamic in the way we think about it and look at it. Sometimes something in anything you do, engineering or whatever, can come up and then you have a new truth come up, or a truth, it's not a new truth, but a truth comes to you and, oh, well, geez, maybe we should explore that and take a look at that as an option for a treatment or try that first. And if it doesn't work, well, you pull someone off that and they're not all cut to pieces, they haven't been all burned and dealing with the aftermath. It was just a thought. It's a dialogue I would like to see happen, and I would be very curious to be enlightened by the outcome of such dialogue, to see it actually explored and someone actually come up with some answers for this question I pose.
It is a challenging question because as researchers, we can, you know, run studies and prove this or that beyond a doubt, but changing practice, how does it translate into actual medical practice? That's a whole challenge in and of itself.
Indeed, which is again why the research dialogue has to happen. Of course, you can't just take a knee-jerk reaction and change everybody's treatments.
Right.
But in my particular case, I would be a lot better off. I'm sure I would have a longer lifespan if we went with my final treatment first.
Right. And have you shared this with your physicians, your thoughts?
I've shared it with workers trying to get medical coverage when I was out of work, and I did bring it up, but unfortunately after the fact, people can't turn back time. Unfortunately, what has been done to me has been done to me, and done for me, I probably should say. This was for my benefit. But with the knowledge of the aftermath and having firsthand experience of that, I would like to see that explored. It won't do anything for me, but it might spare the next batch of patients, the next generation, from a whole lot of heartache that they don't have to endure.
Right.
Right? Maybe we could spare the next person of this. Or not the next person, but at least sometime in the future when we can actually look at this and say, well, gee, maybe we should try that. Hmm. Right? Or at least offer it as an option to a patient.
Right, and you know, because patients, they don't know the options. They go in, they trust their physicians to treat them with what they know, with what works.
Yes.
So maybe if you knew this was an option going in, a very viable option, you know, perhaps you could have had input on how you were treated.
Absolutely. It would be neat. I was given two options. I was offered surgery by my urologist, and oncology offered me radiation and a hormone combination treatment, but it was only for 6 months, and it was free. I wouldn't have to come up with to pay for medicines and such, which weren't covered, but that would be the end of my treatment, so it was over. Well, too bad, you're part of a research study, and or I could have just went for the radiation treatments. And really, it's just my urologist made a more convincing argument to, not argument, but convinced me more so that was the option. Try the surgery. If it doesn't work, there's always radiation, because you can't have surgery after the radiation. Once you've been irradiated, you're non-operable. It's burnt flesh, right? Like, right. I can't be operated on now because of that. I went with that, with the knowledge I was given.
Right.
And the good intentions I was given. But in the aftermath, and having gone through and survived this journey, jeepers, that was totally not the way to go in my particular case.
If you could go back from the very beginning.
Yes.
When you were being offered treatment options, mm-hmm. what would you have liked to be done differently?
I would like to have basically what I know now be told. Okay, we have patients who have taken the testosterone blocking treatments, and it has starved their cancer and it has saved them. I'm not sure, but perhaps that has happened and it hasn't saved someone, of course, right? And then, you can take radiation. These are the complications that come with it, and it renders you inoperable. Or you can have the surgery and a full disclosure of that, right? It would have been nice to have that third option laid at my plate.
At the beginning.
Yeah, and yeah. I mean, I'm not back then, but in hindsight, I'm thinking that I almost definitely would have went for that just because of the non-invasive. Okay, I'm not being burned. That doesn't render me inoperable. I'm not going to be all cut up and live with a catheter for a month and a half and all that stuff, right? Right. I would have definitely went for that first.
You want an exhaustive description of all the options available from the start.
Well, it just would have been nice to have that third option presented.
Right.
Absolutely.
Instead of having to go through things and then have
and
it presented.
And if it didn't work, well then, okay, what's next? Okay, do we have to get to the level of cutting me open and start ripping parts out of me? Well, if so, okay. But it would have been nice to have tried that non-invasive procedure first.
Right.
Right, it was a needle once a month. Great big one, very painful, subcutaneous, but it saved me. And quite frankly, I'd rather have a very painful needle than be cut, because yeah. I was cut from my belly button all the way down and parts taken out, right? And I definitely would. The needle was much less to endure. I'd like to explore that first. I'd like to see someone else have that option. Or at least it explored. Maybe there's a reason not to. I just don't know.
When you think back to the physicians that you had to consult with, would they have been open to having a conversation if you wanted to explore other treatments? Like, did you feel empowered that you could say, you know, is there anything else for me? Did that cross your mind? Or did you even think it was an option that you could bring it up?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up. I don't want to paint this on a certain type of doctor or anything, because that's not the case. Anything you encounter in life comes down to people who you meet, whether it's the policeman, the librarian, the clerk at the grocery store, your medical person that's helping you in whatever capacity. With my urologist, he seemed to have wanted the patient, and that's my impression. My oncologists, they were very open, and I felt more of a balanced disclosure, and they were just trying to help me decide. I will say, after I came out, my urologist wouldn't see me anymore. I couldn't get an appointment. I couldn't get a phone call. I couldn't even talk to him. This is at a time when Victor Boudreau, our Minister of Health, had publicly announced that doctors and medical professionals in New Brunswick can refuse transgender people health care if they are morally opposed to their identity. The caveat he threw in was that they would have to refer to another medical professional. My argument to that was, and yes, I was quite vocal, and other people in the community, trans and not, that you could be referred to a doctor, and then that doctor could refer me to one, maybe even refer me to the back to the original one, and I'd be stuck in a tribal and never have any treatment.
That's a vicious cycle.
It is. It's against the Hippocratic Oath, right? I probably could have made a big molehill, big mess out of this, but I was in quite the mess, and I was more thinking about recovery at that point and my next phase of treatments, but that's an example of what can happen. I do have another urologist now, and I'm very happy with this person. So this is about people. It's not about urologists or whatever, right? But people, we're all people, and in every aspect of society, we are a spectrum of people. And that's what it is. But be prepared for that. That is a difficult thing I went through in the hospital, and something to take was that, jeepers, I can't even get a conversation with my doctor now. oh my God, right? At that point, I was in oncology and ready to start radiation at that point. So I kind of washed my hands of them. And then when I ended up back to needing a urologist with ensuing problems, mostly from complications from the radiation, I ended up with another urologist. I just requested, I can't go back to that person. I don't feel safe. I definitely am not going to let this person cut me or anything. And they just assigned me a new urologist, and I have a wonderful one. So,
in the LGBTQ plus community, do you hear a lot of stories about how discrimination affects their lives, especially when they're going through healthcare or when they're going to appointments?
I have. I think I probably hear it more so because I'm involved with support organizations and people reach to me for help. Everything from human rights issues, homelessness, addictions, you name it. It kind of comes to me. And I do have an example in that. A friend of mine in New Brunswick, I'll just leave it at that, she had regular care issues with her lower leg. There was an injury and stuff, and she was regularly in once every month or two for treatments. And she was in for treatment, and the last time she was in, she related to me that while in care, they kept pressuring her, well, you must have a boyfriend, or do you have a husband? Are you married? You must have a boyfriend. And she's a lesbian. She has a wonderful wife and a wonderful relationship, and she didn't want to out herself to these people. She didn't know them. She didn't know what they would be like. She doesn't know the reaction. We have all experienced discrimination in this, bigotry, I'll just say the word. So these people, who might have been fine with it, have put this patient on the spot, and now they're scared of their providers. They're nervous. Right, and she shouldn't have been pressured into that. It was in the people who asked, it's an innocent enough question, and they were trying to be nice and engage. But think about what you're saying with someone that you don't actually know. You might be just asking someone something very uncomfortable that they have to share. Oh, do you have a boyfriend? And do they really want to say, oh, well, I'm lesbian? Don't pressure someone to have to give that answer.
Right, because you don't know if that's going to affect your care or the way they treat you.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's, well, like me as a transgender patient, my genitals is no one's business between, except for me, who I'm intimate with, and medical professionals that have to go there. If I go to the hospital because I cut my hand and I need a couple stitches, don't ask me about my genitals because it has nothing to do with it, right?
It's common sense, you'd like to think.
Yeah, well, people do. Curiosity sometimes overrides common sense. I do presentations at various places, sensitivity training, TED Talks kind of thing. And one of the things I do is it's kind of theatrical. I get someone to share the stage with me and do an example of it. Let's say I'm at the bookstore and I'm shopping. Like, well, would you be a good sport and take part?
Sure.
Okay.
Count me in.
Okay. You're at the bookstore and you're looking at books. Okay.
Yes.
I know it's radio. You don't have a visual, but I'm in the bookstore too. And I just walk right over and I say, hi, how are you? I hope you don't mind my approaching you. I just love your blouse.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. And then I point down towards the crotch and I say, oh, do you shave? Oh, sorry. No, really. I'm just curious. Really. I'm just curious. Oh, any tats? And of course, then I let the poor person and you off stage. Thank you for being a good sport.
No.
But would you do that to someone, a complete stranger? Would you walk right up to them and ask them if they shave their genitals or have any tats? No. So why would you come up to me and say, what do you got down there? Or have you had surgery? And then I'm on the spot, and I don't want to talk about my genitals. Who is this person? But they don't realize how invasive they are because they're so curious. They lose that sense of social propriety.
Absolutely. I imagine you get a lot of curious questions.
Oh, you do.
Yeah.
You do. It's part of being visibly trans.
Absolutely.
Right? There's a huge trans community in St. John. And most people don't know you. People encounter trans people all the time. The clerk at your bank, someone at the grocery store, they don't know you because they don't out themselves to you because they don't want to deal with the stigma. They just don't tell you, right?
So what are those people telling you about their healthcare experiences in New Brunswick? Are there any red flags? Is there anything that's really working for the trans community?
Well, I do have to say, I want to give a shout out. I don't know if I can say the university, a good thing they did.
Go for it.
Yeah, okay. Dow Medical School. They have been accessing sensitivity training for our future medical professionals. And basically, we give them a heads up on what trans and about the LGBT plus, or 2T2IA, and there's lots of letters. I'll say plus because I'm lazy and stupid. So the first time they get, we educate them on this. So the first time they get a trans patient, they have an idea how to deal with them. They don't do the uncomfortable questions, and the medical professional is not uncomfortable either, whether it be belief system or just they don't want to make the patient uncomfortable. It's been addressed, and then you're more prepared to deal with it. And then on both sides, the patient and doctor or nurse, whatever relationship, mm-hmm. it's more comfortable. And I just want to give a big shout out and applaud them because they've been accessing this for years, and it's wonderful. They've held conferences on it. I was in a panelist in the last InterCity one. It was
that's amazing.
I really want to give a shout out to the organizations that actually take the point to leap forward and educate themselves on the issues instead of, oh, we're fine, right?
Yeah, it's taking the initiative before there's a problem.
Absolutely.
Which a lot of organizations wait for there's a problem, and then the training comes in, and it's reactive rather than proactive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Some places will give you a 10-minute video and say, okay, you've got diversity training, but it doesn't really cover anything. It just says, everyone be nice to each other. But they don't really cover the issues and educate people.
No. I think we've all received that training at some point in our lives.
I've been there, and I've walked out, and I don't really feel I learned anything. But I'll rate it because I want the job. Okay.
Yeah. Right? This was great.
You know?
Do you have any positive stories from when you were a cancer patient?
Yeah, actually, I got quite a few. I transitioned. I outed to my oncologist, and the entire department, they embraced me. They were wonderful with me. It was a positive experience, especially being so nervous, having had the previous issue. I was like, oh, no, I don't know what I can go through, but I'm out now. I am transitioning, right? Things are changing. I mean, I've changed my body, right?
Yeah.
Or I have changed my body now, but... So it was nice to have that experience. I do have a good and bad. Recently, in last fall or last spring, April, May, I had great complications from my radiation treatments. Actually, I just found out yesterday a root of a lot of it is turned out my bladder has been cooked, burnt. They got that when it shouldn't have happened. And I've been dealing with issues, bleeding out of pretty much every end and collapsing, all kinds of stuff. My immune system crashed at the time, and it was shingles as well, right across my face. Anybody that doesn't know about shingles, take a look at it. Get the shot. Please get the shot, okay? Even if you're anti-vax, you do not want this, and it won't prevent you from getting it, but it'll make it a lot less severe. Anyways, I was at the point, I was incapacitated. I was a lump on a bed and being a pincushion, and they were so good with me. They respected who I was, my pronouns. They took care of me. I never, ever felt like a freak, not at one point during the entire experience of that. And then when it came time for release, it was horrible all of a sudden. I was removed from isolation. I could go home as long as I had care at home, which I had. I had a friend who was going to take me in for aftercare. So they moved me to another room because they had to release the isolated room. Of course, the need is there. And they just threw me in with someone, and I'll say it. I wear hair because I'm thin in front. Most of this is my real hair, but I'm self-conscious, and I do wear hair on top to supplement it, like many people do. And they put me next to a patient, and their guests were peeking around the curtain because they couldn't wear my hair because my whole head was nothing but sores, my face was open, I could finally see again, and they're taking peeks at the freak show. And all the discussions I hear on the other side of the curtain that ensues. And now I'm triggered. I don't want to be there. I don't even know what these people are like. I've certainly been threatened and chased as a trans woman outside. And I said, well, I want to go. You said you can go home. Here's my caretaker sent me home. I was told just get my prescriptions from you and you can let me go. And then they refused to let me go. And you can't refuse this. I'm sound mind, have care. I've met all the conditions for release. Why now? Turns out the doctor that they transferred to my care wasn't there, and they didn't want to come back. So I won't name the person, and that's my only real interaction with the person anyways. So I sought legal advice. I'm fortunate to have people in the community who have experience legally with this, and brought it to them. And it turns out the crux of it, that they told me if I went home, I would have to sign this piece of paper they put in front of me. You have to sign this 100% absolving them of all care and responsibility of me, or they would not release my medications. I would go home without my medications. So I sought legal advice. For anyone listening out there who provides care, you cannot coerce a patient into staying by threatening to withhold their medications. You are legally accountable for this. And I was very much on the fence about making these people legally accountable for this. I didn't, because I don't want to rob this community of necessary medical folks. But I did bring it up. What happened after, I don't know. I'm not privy to those discussions. So that was a thing I had to deal with. They put me in another room for the night, a single, with an open door on the corner, open to the hallway, and people were walking by. Now I've got everybody that are walking the hallway staring in and looking at the freak show. And I had a meltdown. It shattered me. It finished me. With all I had endured, then I had to endure that. And I said, I'm leaving. I've called this person. This is my lawyer. You give me my medicines, or we're coming back, and this is going to turn into a mess. I'm just going to say the word. It's going to turn into a show, and it's going to be for you.
To continue listening to Part B of the pilot episode, click on the link to follow. Be part of the solution with Impart. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and visit our website, impart.team.